Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. Thanks so much, John, for a brilliant speech. And you talked about the cultural cringe that the Romans felt towards the Greeks. All month we felt a cultural cringe at the Oldie organising this lunch for our next speaker, who's the greatest restaurateur of the age. Jeremy King has owned and run the Caprice, the Ivy, just to name a few, Sheekies, Wolsey, Delaunay, Arlington, the Park, and now is about to open our old home of the Oldie Lunches, Simpsons in the Strand. And he's written a terrific new book, Without Reservation, Lessons from a Life in Restaurants. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeremy King.
Normally I would do this without notes, but I'm a risk taker, but I've decided you're too august a group to do that, so I'm going to tiny bit closer. Yes, that's so without reservation. This could be termed a restaurateur memoir, but I'm going to fervently avoid that nomenclature because the world of restaurant memoir and autobiography is the most boring cringe-making you could ever hope to encounter. And I know because I've got quite a collection. I'm fascinated by it. Time a bit closer. I'm fascinated by the whole nature of restaurateurs because some of you may know the restaurant Quo Vadis and Leone, Leone's Quo Vadis, he had a... The title of his was, I Shall Die on the Carpet. And it was equally boring to that. And they're normally a list of names. There's another great, Joseph Vecchi, who wrote, what was his called? The Tavern is My Drum. And that was full of, it was my great honor to serve the beggar Marga Khan, or I was privileged to minister to such ruling potentates as King Manuel of Portugal. Who knew? I mean, it's... So I've been encouraged over the years to write a book. First of all, by Ed Victor, who some of you might know, and lastly, by Caroline Michel. And Caroline Michel, a wonderful agent from Peter Fraser Dunlop, kept going and saying, come on, you could write it, it could be really interesting. But it's a lot of difficulties. A, the book could be boring, and B, I have to talk about living individuals. And my thanks actually go to Graham Norton for the breakthrough. And the reason being is that I read an interview. He'd been caught in an interview with somebody who, in a rather sort of reactionary way, was saying, the youth of today have no discipline, so on and so forth, and we need to bring back national service. And then Graham said, no, actually, I've got a better idea. I think the youth of today should be forced to work in a restaurant for 6 months. And that would teach them the necessary discipline. And I thought about it, and I thought, yeah, you know, for a generation who's either looking at a screen or their feet, to go into a restaurant where you suddenly have to learn about eye-to-eye contact, to teamwork, dispute reconciliation, any number of things, it's set it up. And it's certainly my children always list first on their CV that they worked in the restaurants and they're proud. And interestingly, there's a lot of people take more interest for that. Ruthie Rogers was telling me recently that because she has big friends at Apple, is that if an applicant has a restaurant experience, they take more interest. It's actually, it leads them away. So I thought, okay, maybe I can use this, that restaurants are the microcosm of life. And it gave birth to the book, and hence the subtitle, which is Lessons from a Life in Restaurants. Now, it finally worked. I went through some difficult periods along the way, and in fact lost the restaurants. And there was a very interesting moment when my solicitor, having been told by my erstwhile partners that they were going to destroy me, I went to my solicitor and I said, "Destroy me." He said, What do you mean? I said, "Destroy me. If somebody wanted to destroy me, what could they do?" And, oh my gosh, I don't know if any of you have seen that TV series Suits. I felt I was in an episode, and all these things I could be denied even having had anything to do with the restaurants. But the one which got me most of all was they said, "So, are you writing a book?" I said, "Yes." "How far in?" I said, "I don't know, 30, 40,000 words. "And you wrote it on holiday?" I said, "No." "And you wrote it by hand?" I said, "No, of course not, on my laptop." "Your laptop?" "Well, the company laptop." They said, "This book now belongs to your ex-partners. They can do with it whatever they want." And that sort of held up the process a bit. But it also helped me work through it. I'm now published. I still have post-publication anxiety. I mean, I can sit next to Mary Berry and with an unutilized pen and think. But mercifully, those of you who came up to me, thank you. That was very gratifying. But what I've learned, and it's really interesting about, I learn from everything in life that I can, and this book is trying to pass that on. And I learned from some of the nicest comments about it, is people saying, I didn't want it to end. And I find that notion strange, because I realized I like to end books. I'm probably narrative driven. They didn't want it to end, which I think is the biggest compliment you can actually pay to a writer. So I'm resolved to read quite much more carefully, listen in fact. But let me explain a bit more about the book. This book there's an element of biography. A young boy called Jeremy, who, growing up under the influence of a mother who put it into context, the first time she saw me, she said, in the hospital, she said, "That's not mine." And she went on and she named me, one of my names is Bruce, which my father admitted was because I was named after Bruce Woodcock, who in 1954, when I was born, was known as the ugliest boxer in the world. I said to my father, "You could have stopped that." And she was a mother who in front of me, at the age of 15, told friends, "Yeah, I do love my boys, but given the opportunity to choose a game whether to have children, definitely not." And so against that background, I was somewhat shy. She sort of siphoned the confidence out of me. So this is all quite fun, because being a restaurateur is absolutely not my imagined profession. But all that autobiographical side is just part of the path of how I've learned, how people have harmed me, how people have helped me, and it acts as a thread of narrative throughout the book. There are different chapters. There's a chapter, some of you, a lot of you probably, would know Peter Langan, the eponymous Langan's Brasserie. And Peter Langan was never going to be my role model, but he was an influence, and he taught me so much. And the reason those who don't know him, he was a drunk, he was a pest, he was a nuisance. He's also the most natural restaurateur I've probably ever known, and he taught me so much about brasseries, the fact that he was an egalitarian, the fact that he believed the Duchess should sit down next to the taxi driver. This is fundamental in my life. And it's true, his table craft is not to emulate, and certainly wouldn't get away with it these days, because he'd drink. In the book, you'll see a photograph of him lying face down in the bar of Langan's. And he he was not averse to going up to random ladies in the restaurant and say, "Are you wearing stockings or tights?" So I didn't emulate him, but I learned. And Langens was such a restaurant in the 70s, it taught me so much, along with the place I was working then, which was Joe Allen. So what else is in this book? There'll be glamour, there'll be fame, there'll be infamy. Funnily enough, my colleague was mentioning somebody earlier on. I mean, it's going to be a journey over the last 50 years. A lot of you will see similarity. There are tales of Princess of Wales. There are poignant tales of her. It's not all celebrity starring. It'll be tales about Lauren Bacall. Lauren Bacall, who is a woman who I loved and admired, and once called me over with the crook of her finger and said, pointed to a particularly good-looking waiter and said, "Oil him, wrap him, and send him to my room." Wonderfully, I mean, it was wonderfully, he turned down the offer. I'm not sure I would have been quite so disciplined. But anyway, you'll read about the stars of the time, from Andy Warhol to Elizabeth Taylor, my great love, A.A. Gill, as well as certain Jeffrey Archer, who I had another chapter on him, but the publishers thought that may not get past legals. But anyway, I'm hopefully it will surprise and elucidate you. There will be a chapter on Freud. There are journeys into the arts in many ways. There's portraiture by Freud, there's portraiture actually by Pinter, and it's all part of my education came from Freud. And when he died, his table was covered with a black tablecloth, and we didn't use it for a week. Antonio Fraser, of course, with great wit, came to me and said, "I'd love the same accolade, but could you use a red cloth and perhaps put some ice on the table in case it's rather hot where I'm going?" I have a thing about narcissists, because Michael Winner said, "What will you do for me?" Which is, the answer was, nothing. A good way of talking about Pinter is that there was, and it's about the book, is that there is a print which was done by a friend of mine, Tom Phillips, and it depicts Samuel Beckett, watching a rehearsal of his play, and the legend across it says, "Try again, fail better." Which is a wonderful quote from him. And it was strange, that print was much admired by Harold Pinter, and I write about it. And he heard me quote from it one day and got into one of his furies, which he was very capable of doing. He said, "So you got it?" I said, "What?" And he said, "That print, you outbid me at the auction." I said, no, I had a copy already. And to watch him melt like a little boy as he received a copy I got from Tom was so moving. And my publishers asked me to write about Pinter, and I said, "I can't, because Antonio's still alive." And they were begging me, so I thought, okay, I will write about Pinter. And there's two chapters, one about the play Celebration and one about my life with him. And I thought the way to do it is, Antonio still comes into the park a lot, along with Judy Daish, who was her friend, Harold's agent, looked after the estate. And I said, "Right, here's the thing, I've written a book. There's two chapters about Harold and therefore about you, Antonio. I can't publish it without your approval, so this is how we do it. I'm going to give you these chapters. You're going to read them, and you're going to tell me they're brilliant, they're wonderful, and you have no problem whatsoever me printing. Then you tell Judy what you really think, and then Judy will give me the bad news." But actually, she said to me in a typical way, I love what you wrote. I may not agree with everything, but I love what you wrote. And she afterwards, she said, I'm going to give you a quote for the cover, which was very generous, until she then told me, actually, I want to change the quote. I thought, oh, God, what have I done wrong? And she said, I said, what do you want? She said, I want to say, I would like to open a restaurant, which to me was a massive compliment. So it's a book about memories and anecdotes, but also of insights and lessons and humanity, failure, success. And that full Beckett quote is, ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail better. So maybe you will try that book, and hopefully I won't fail you. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.